Hi, I'm Daisy.
Hi, I'm David.
And we're the MSA Crusaders.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of MSA Crusaders. Today we're here on episode number 9 with Carrie Walsh. Hi, Carrie, and welcome to the MSA Crusaders.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, David and Daisy. Thank you so much for having me.
It is so nice to meet you. I feel like I already know you. We've been chatting
We've been
for a
chatting
little
a
while.
lot. Yeah. And you've been
So,
so helpful. Thank you so much.
oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. And why don't you start by telling us about your life before MSA?
Sure. Well, I've been a musician for pretty much all my life, an artist, and I did some dancing and acting too, but primarily I was a flute player and an opera singer. And went to arts colleges and lived in Europe for a while and toured there. And I've actually toured all over the world, mostly singing opera and concert vocal music. And
And you
I've
do
also,
have an IMDb page, don't you?
I have an IMDb page, yes. Actually, I have two because one is for movie soundtracks and the other is for movie and TV soundtracks and the other
Wow.
is for acting. So I need to merge the two pages, but.
I looked at that. That is really neat. I've never met anyone with a page.
Thank you.
It's really neat seeing your opera on there and
Thank you.
By the way, I love symphony and I love opera and I love the two when they're together. So, Carrie, you're right up my alley.
Yeah, well, you know what's neat is that I've had both the experience of playing flute in the middle of an orchestra where, when you're in the flute section, you're surrounded by all the other musicians, so that's a real rush. And then when you sing opera, you're on the stage, and sometimes the orchestra's down in the pit, or sometimes you're on the stage with the orchestra, and the orchestra's backing you up behind you. But they're all great, no matter where you are in the configuration. It's always a great experience, and I miss it terribly.
I bet you do.
I sure do.
So tell us, how did your signals first start up?
Well, things started to get strange about 2 years ago. And let me preface this by saying that I have a very, very long-standing history of multiple very serious autoimmune diseases, which include scleroderma, Sjogren's disease, neurobichettes, and what they sometimes called overlap syndrome, which can include dermatomyositis and scleroderma and some other autoimmune conditions. I also have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and mast cell disorder and POTS and orthostatic hypotension that were probably lifelong related to those conditions. But this is a whole new kettle of fish. So how things evolved was that a couple of years ago, I just noticed my energy was lagging, and I was starting to have trouble with coordination and sleep. I just assumed at first that I was having a relapse of my autoimmune conditions because 6 to 7 years ago, I had several very, very expensive IV infusions of mesenchymal stem cells. Not bone marrow transplants per se, but just IV. And they were extremely successful, and I went into as much remission as I could have hoped for. At that point, I was not doing well at all. I had spent an entire summer in the hospital. I was having kidney failure and seizures and
Scary.
all kinds of, I was not headed in a good direction. So the stem cells were our second lease on life. And I knew that, I was told that they could start losing their efficacy within about 5 years. So I just assumed I was having a relapse of my pre-existing autoimmune conditions, and that was causing all these things. Where it gets complicated is that I had a pre-existing neurological autoimmune condition. Now the vocal fry is coming in, there it goes. So that's what I assumed. And just went with that. I fell, lost my balance and fell and broke a wrist, really shattered it last summer and just laughed it off, figured, oh, I'm being a klutz, but I didn't think much of it. Hmm. Then I started to notice very, very severe worsening brain fog, and I had a neuropsych test to test for ADD, and I really did very badly. I felt like an idiot, and I generally don't consider myself a stupid person, so I couldn't figure out what the problem was. I just couldn't
manage
it.
Yourself.
Yeah. What's that?
You weren't yourself.
I wasn't myself at all, and I knew that, but I didn't know why.
I'm glad you mentioned those stem cells, because I had this identical stem cells, which is the second from top tier from your umbilical, but for MSA in Northern Chicago, we can talk about that later. And it's been three months and nothing yet. It could take up to 6 months for those to take effect. And it's so hard for stem cells to cross the blood-brain barrier for our issue. But I'm glad you said that it was a second chance on life for you, because there are a lot of good reasons to, besides, you know, I'm not saying that in MSA, but it worked for your other issues for the most part, you know?
I think that the statistics, although, you know, let's say traditional medicine or more narrow-minded practitioners here in the United States, at least, still don't consider stem cells a proven cure or treatment for autoimmune diseases, but the reports show that they can be extremely effective. From what I understand, and I know you all know better about this than I do, but from what I've read and heard, the jury's still out on stem cells for MSA. And I know one person who claims they've helped her tremendously. Other people say they've heard mixed results. I think it may have to do with mode of delivery.
Yeah, it's everything I've read was 20% see something of improvement, and 10% it's just markedly, like they actually notice things where it actually impacts their life. I would imagine, in my own humble opinion, that if MSA would have been changed in one person with those stem cells that much, it would have made some pretty good news somewhere, somehow.
Right. Yeah.
So there's always that grain of salt that's out there with some of the stuff, you know?
Right. My attitude about it is that, you know, things aren't heading in a good direction really for any of us. And I feel like I have to try anything I possibly can. So I have a list of very specific things to do.
What do we have to lose?
What do we have to lose except money, which is a lot, and where to get it is difficult, but working on that part. So I did have one IV exosome infusion at a center in the Chicago area a bit more than a month ago. And I would say after a month, what I felt was a bit of improvement in the bradykinesia. I felt that I was a bit lighter overall, not quite so heavy, not quite so mired in concrete, a bit moving more flowingly and easily without such tremendous effort. That, I hope, is not my imagination. They did say that it will take several more treatments to feel anything at all. And this time I'm planning to go to Mexico, to Guadalajara, where I can get both IV vaporized and intrathecal, which is into the dura of the spine, so that presumably they will reach into the brain. Ideal would be cells cathed to the brain directly.
Right.
And I know of someone who did that in Argentina for her MS, and she went completely into remission. I don't know. I haven't found anyone in Mexico who does that, and I'm not going to trust such a dangerous procedure to any random person.
Mm-hmm.
I have absolute proof that they know what they're doing and it's safe. So as of now, that's not on the table. Even an intrathecal injection is dangerous, but I feel like I'm confident with a practitioner that I found that can at least do that procedure.
So it's really impacted your mobility and your coordination then?
Very much so. I feel like such a klutz. And sometimes my gait is very off and I just stumble. So I usually use a walker if I have to go any distance. I get help with a wheelchair. I can, on good days, I can walk short distances. It's still somewhat up and down at this point, depending a great deal on how much rest I get, what kind of, you know, whether I've taken all my meds on time and my supplements and my numerous supplements that I'm taking, such as NAC and olive leaf extract to help manage the OH, and really a million other things. But it's still up and down. But on a bad day, I'm really pretty bedridden, which has rendered me unable to be gainfully employed at any of the things I was doing, even up until recently, where I was selling some holistic health products, working as a holistic counselor, a medical intuitive. I'll send you my website about that. Not so much performing, but when I did perform, I was performing as a sound healer. So I would play singing bowls and play the flute a bit and some drums and singing, which is a much less energetically taxing thing to do than singing opera. But all of that's off the table now, because I don't know on any given day whether I'll be functional or even able to talk.
Yeah, it's horrible that you can do that and heal others when you wish you could maybe just look in the mirror and think to yourself or something and heal yourself.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was something. Theoretically, we should be able to. It's easier said than done. One of my pet peeves, actually, you know, we all go through this, I'm sure. Well-meaning people don't know what to say, and they try to comfort us. But one of the things that a person said, which was really not the right thing to say, was, well, it's all up to you. It's all depending on your attitude.
No, I wish.
That'd be nice. MSA is fatal, period.
Yeah. And
it's not my responsibility that I'm dealing with this curse, and don't talk to me about my karma or anything like that.
No.
I, that's between me and myself and God and whatever I need to work out, but that's not anybody else's business, nor is it anybody else's plate, and it's not helpful, as well-meaning as it may be, to say, if you have a positive attitude, you'll get better.
Carrie, you are the better person. If somebody would have told me that to my face, I would be in jail. There is no way somebody would tell me it's up to me to beat a disease that's killing your brain and spinal cord and organs. There's absolutely no way.
Oh, right. I saw that with my karma.
Right.
I was so mad when I heard those words.
I spoke to someone privately. I didn't want to school anyone in public because, like I said, I know people mean well, and sometimes they really have no idea what to say. Or they say, you got this. No, I don't got this. I don't got it at all.
Yeah, you're right. When they say that, I just nod. I'm like, yep. Yeah, I just, there's nothing to say. Back, you know.
And so sometimes it affects you on your blood pressure and digestion and things like that that are autonomic in our bodies. How about you, Carrie? Do you have a lot of trouble with your autonomic system?
Autonomic system is a complete
autonomic system. Sorry about that.
It's a disaster. So that takes me back to how things developed over the last year. So the neuropsych testing was in November. That didn't go well. Then I was noticing that it was getting harder and harder to walk, and I wasn't able to do my lake walks that I had always enjoyed so much. My fatigue was getting worse and worse. Then in February, I had what was called a nocturnal seizure, where I was up in the middle of the night, wandering around, crashing into things, knocking things over. I was confused. I didn't know what it was doing. And then someone tried to wake me up, thinking I was sleepwalking, and I wasn't, and I started screaming. So I spent the next few days in the hospital. Turned out I had a nocturnal seizure from hyponatremia, which is low salt, which is due to SIADH syndrome of inappropriate antidiuretic hormone secretion, which as I mentioned earlier, the doctor said was from the brain neurodegeneration. So while I was there, coincidentally, I also had severe orthostatic hypotension, and they tried to do a 3-minute standing test. I didn't make it to 2 minutes before it went down to 60 over 30, and I was about to fall, so they put me back in bed quickly. They tried to put me on Florinef, but I already have a bone disease called AVN from years and years and years of steroids, so I refused the Florinef and was put on 4 grams of salt a day to manage the hyponatremia. So I that along with keeping hydrated and using compression garments is how I've dealt with the orthostatic hypotension.
Do you have someone to help you with those stockings?
I know that's I have a caregiver. Yes.
Good.
I do.
Good.
Then as far as the high blood pressure, the way this prominent doctor who is a great ally has explained it is that my baroreceptor reflex is dysfunctional. It is no longer working, and it cannot regulate my blood pressure. So it will go up to, say, for instance, 235 over 130 supine. Just lying there, and then, which of course puts you at risk for a stroke, and then it will plummet back down to, say, 70 over 50 again for no apparent reason, not even just posturally related, which a lot of doctors don't seem to understand that this can happen just supine, just lying there doing nothing with no trigger, no stress, no particular trigger whatsoever, and it's because the baroreceptor reflex doesn't work. There was mention of something called the CVRX barostim, which they install in the carotid sinus arch where the bifurcation is, that can signal the body to recognize when the blood pressure is too high or too low. However, that's as of now only used for congestive heart failure. So that would be an off-label experimental use, and I haven't gotten anywhere with that.
I meant to ask you earlier, do you have C or P?
So far, it looks like P, though at some point there may be some C. When my speech is really bad, it's really bad. It's very slurry. It sounds like I'm drunk and I can't form a sentence. And so I'm still lacking sophisticated imaging. So that at some point later we'll tell a more complete story. I think I'm going to be one of those people which has a combination.
So the further along you get, you are
everybody gets both of them at some point.
I think so. That's that's where I'm headed.
As because your vocal cord is like it's strictly an MSAC. But your voice, actually slurring your voice, and like myself, I'm slurring too. A lot of that is P because of the muscle is not in sync with what your brain's telling it to do. So, when you said your vocal cord, that's C, without a doubt.
Well, the vocal
just that part of it,
right. That's why I'm saying I have elements of both, which
I can't get the words out. I'm like, they're there, but
that's okay. Let me just finish my thought and then tell me what you were trying to say. I don't want to forget what I'm saying because
absolutely
keep one track. The vocal cords, my vocal cords are actually atrophied. They don't hold the hole where they're supposed to close. It doesn't close. So I don't phonate properly anymore, which is why I can't sing. I'm going to try getting stem cells in there and maybe even Restylane or some sort of spa filler just so that I might be able to sing a little more for my own enjoyment.
I hope so.
Because it would make me happy, but that's not a life or death matter and not as urgent as all of this other stuff, which is basically to prevent any more brain cells from dying and from the alpha-synuclein protein from aggregating further than it already has or is. And so I'm sorry, Daisy, what were you going to say?
Oh, yeah, this is a flap in your esophagus. Doesn't close, and your muscles in your throat get really tired with pee, and that's why I can feel, I know what I want to say, but like, it's like my mouth is behind, like my feet are when from my brain wanting to take the steps.
Right. I know exactly what you mean. And I feel that way with my brain overall, that my whole body, it's not direct, it's not communicating with many body systems.
Yeah, you want to yell at your body, say, come on, catch up.
Come on, catch up, do what you're supposed to do, right? So to answer your question, I have numerous signs of autonomic dysfunction and failure. And then, so going back to February, I was in the hospital. They discharged me while I still had hyponatremia, which was a terrible thing to do. And even though I started taking salt, my blood salt was still too low. A few days later, I was in the UPS store and had a complete autonomic meltdown. I was starting to black out. I couldn't breathe very well. I was sweating profusely. I was about to vomit. And everything was just falling apart. So I tried sitting down. That didn't help. I laid down. And then they said, you need us to call 911. And I said, yeah, right away. So then I ended up back in. And this time, it wasn't just the hyponatremia. It was just an autonomic complete breakdown. And no one at that time had any explanation for what was going on. It all makes a lot more sense now.
Well, can you tell me how your day-to-day activities go from getting up and going to bed?
Well, it depends. I have pretty severe REM sleep disorder. So sometimes I cry and scream and thrash around in my sleep. I have often nightmares about things like bugs swarming around me, and I'm trying to swat them away. So that can be exhausting. Sometimes I'm afraid to go to sleep because I know it's just going to not be fun. And so it depends on how many hours of consecutive sleep and total sleep I've gotten. I try to get up at a set time and accomplish things, but I don't always succeed.
Do you have somebody you live with?
I have a caregiver that's been assigned by the city or by the state, and okay. She helps with things around the house and things I need help with.
So you don't, I guess the question would have been, you're not necessarily punching anybody at night,
Okay. I wouldn't want to sleep with myself at this point. No, I wouldn't sit on anybody. I've heard about plenty of patients putting their partners in a headlock or punching them, giving them a black eye and things like that.
David, poor Susie.
Yeah, my wife. Oh, God bless her. So you mentioned your caregiver. And what role does the caregiver in your case do for you that makes it better or worse?
Well, mostly she can do with some light, she can help with some light housework, she can do some errands, she can help with the stockings, she can help. I try to do everything myself, but if I'm really too tired and I need help, she can really help me with anything. If I need to use a wheelchair to go to an appointment because it's too far to walk, she comes with me and will push me in the wheelchair to get where I need to go. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things.
The MSA, not only obviously affecting the speech and communication on top of the moving in general that we take for granted, how has this affected connecting and dealing with friends and family and interacting?
It's been a little weird. Again, keep in mind, I've been dealing with chronic illness for a very, very long time. Really, pretty severely since, let's say, 2006, 2007. Around 2009 is when things really started getting bad, and I was in the hospital a lot. I was sick with autoimmune disease and all the other things really my whole life, but I didn't let it keep me from having a career or socializing or having friends. What I found is that I have to be careful because, number one, I've been sick before and I'm very sensitive about what I don't want to hear is, oh no, this again, because it's not this again, it's something new.
Yeah.
And I'm very sensitive about that.
Makes sense.
Well, and I've also found that some people have limited tolerance for bad news, and they don't want to hear about it. And I've learned that some people I thought would be sympathetic really aren't at all, and others I wouldn't have expected to be sympathetic are extremely sympathetic. I'm not finding support in some of the places where I'd hoped I would, and I am finding encouragement and emotional support in some other surprising places. Of course, support groups are always great for that. Over the years, I've run a number of my own support groups for various other conditions, and I've been in charge. In fact, that's how I ended up becoming a rare disease advocate and a counselor. I've counseled so many people with rare diseases and helped them cope and help them find answers and treatments. I've counseled people who were on the brink of suicide and walked them down from the ledge. I've worked with so many people, and I still do the best I can, even though I don't feel well right now. I'm still doing all of that because it keeps it makes me feel like I still have worth and I still have something to give.
I wish I could hug you. I'm getting an air hug right now.
Air hug.
Yeah, I was wondering what you're doing, Daisy. I was starting to wonder about you. She did an RBD while she's talking to us.
God, what a messed up thing that is. You know, the RBD I had for like 10 years prior, and I just thought it was PTSD from medical trauma because I've been through so many hospital. Talk about crazy people in the hospital. I had gangrenous appendicitis once, and they didn't believe me because, quote, I wasn't lying on the floor writhing and screaming in pain.
I've heard that before. Yeah, I've heard exactly.
Meanwhile, I was lying there getting gangrene. Good job.
So you mentioned before we got on here, and I want to put this in context. So you have obviously I want you to expound on this, but you mentioned that you've had a very sickly life, I guess we could say that. I used to think I had a sickly life, but not listening to yours. I'm like, you know, there we go. But you had many issues before MSA, and then you had some stem cell treatments before MSA, right. I believe, if I heard that right, which did improve some or a portion of the symptoms, at least alleviated the symptoms, maybe not got rid of the disease, but alleviated the symptoms. Right. Now we're back to MSA, and you literally had a list of symptoms of the criteria for diagnosing MSA, which was astounding.
Everything and then some. I know. I have never actually met anybody with such a long list as I have.
No, and I think I'm not a doctor. The fact that, you know, those stem cells had worked so well, or at least alleviated a portion of it to some, what extent, I don't know, but you know, now it's like today it's compounding everything, because now those things are making a comeback, and then we're gonna say, you know, jumping on top of it.
Right. So that's why it certainly won't hurt to get more of them. As I said, as you pointed out, getting into that blood-brain barrier, I'm told certain stem cells are more effective at getting through that barrier than others. Yeah.
The ones, so you had the, if you could pronounce that, that's awesome. Yeah, I had the pleuritic ones, which are the ones that, the only ones besides placenta, or the next step up from yours, which is yours are the middle of the 3 of 5, and mine's the ones I had were the 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And they those ones can actually regenerate in the brain, but they have to cross the brain barrier, which is absolutely hard to do.
That's why I'm going to continue searching for someone somewhere in the world who will do a cast treatment directly to the brain. As I said, somebody did it in Argentina. I heard about it. I'll look around. I'll keep looking.
You know, with all due respect and love you to death, you know, if I'm at that point where, you're not supposed to drill that brain. I mean, but they're going to do it for a clinical trials, you know, once we get accepted. But it's like, I personally, I would be more than willing to take a risk of whatever that surgery was to inject directly to the brain, because that's the key to stem cells, is getting into the brain, into
right.
the cranium. Can you list again? No, it was a list, Carrie. It was quite a list, and you know, we have to keep in context that you had so many autoimmune issues before MSA, sure. which stem cells had rectified at least a portion of those, and now those are making a comeback with MSA. So when we hear a list, right. it's
Not be. Actually, my labs, my autoimmune labs, in terms of my ANA, my complements. Mm-hmm. My CRP, things like that. My markers have all been pretty good,
good.
Lately. So that's good news, which means that it isn't so much those autoimmune diseases, but rather pretty much all or mostly the MSA instead.
Yeah, you have a very, when you spoke earlier, I mean, I want you to give me a list again. I mean, and of course, I would never ask you to admit anything. You have symptoms of everything up and down the spectrum from MSAP to C, touching every part of autoimmune systems, touching every part of the physical body.
Right.
And I've never heard, of course, I don't know everybody. I don't attest to know everybody, but I've never interacted with anybody or read about somebody that had literally the extent of, you know, the entire body being affected. It's like it's not hitting everything deadly all at once, but it's hitting everything right. equally at the same time. This is what I'm getting.
Well, it feels like there's something new every day.
Yeah,
and a lot
especially
of
these, for 3 years.
What's that?
Especially for 3 years in.
Right, it's going downhill really quickly, and I don't really know why, because I have a very healthy diet and I keep things low stress, and I my lifestyle is perfectly healthy, and I'm very proactive. So I don't really understand why I'm having bad luck with this, but it is, things are not going in a good direction. So are you wanting my list of symptoms again?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Sure, I'll just go right down the list here.
Don't tire yourself out.
No, I'm okay. Stridor, severe REM sleep disorder, which is called RBD,
mm-hmm.
vocal cord atrophy, occasional blepharospasm, difficulty beginning any movement from rest, particularly feeling like my feet are in concrete. Bradykinesia, when they did the finger tap test, I didn't do very well with that. In other words, my amplitude and speed slowed down. Restless leg syndrome, occasional choking while lying down, and I can't swallow and I need to sit up. A lot of body stiffness and severe pain, coat hanger pain, very severe calf tightness that makes my steps shuffle, sometimes spasms, twitches while both awake and asleep. They've been observed in the seizure unit, the EMU at UIC Hospital back in June, which is where they first documented the REM disorder. Some mild finger curling, severe facial dystonia and some cervical dystonia, which has caused severe TMJ and clenching. And that's very, very painful.
TMJ, is that the jaw?
Right. Okay. So it's the oral facial dystonia. The muscles right. in my face go into very severe spasm. Okay, again, bradykinesia, worsening brain fog, which is causing me to be very confused half the time, increasing difficulty with writing, sloppy handwriting, speaking and writing. I repeat words and letters, misspell things, use the wrong words, don't even know what I'm talking about, don't even notice. Autonomic failure on various occasions where everything just collapses. Standing lightheadedness. Orthostatic hypotension, in other words, fainting and falling, broke my wrist. Let's see, where am I? Okay, worsening POTS, OH said that, right? Extreme blood pressure fluctuations, like I said, from mm-hmm. say 235 over to 130 down to 70 over 50. Okay, panting, wheezing, difficulty breathing, exercise intolerance, extreme dizziness and fatigue, really bad situation, can't really eat meals, put things in a blender. So as I said, vocal cord atrophy and hypophonia was diagnosed. I'm pushing my voice right now. I'm gonna crash after this because it's gonna make me really tired. And the associations that I have articles about, which the doctors weren't even aware of, are hyponatremia, as I said, the symptom inappropriate, the hormone secretion, which causes hyponatremia, which is low salt, low IgG and IgM can be affiliated or associated with MSA, and Sjogren's disease can be associated with MSA. In other words, if you have Sjogren's. I'm sorry, Sjogren's is where you get dry eyes and dry mouth.
And joint aches, right?
And joint aches. And I have just terrible, terrible pain sometimes, in stomach pain where I just want to curl up in a ball and die. It's just awful. And there's really nothing with all the medications I take, even then it just is unbearable sometimes.
My sister has Sjogren's.
Sjogren's isn't fun, and it can be very debilitating. It can cause arthritis and severe fatigue too. There's apparently, according to these articles, if you already have Sjogren's, you may be more at risk of developing MSA. In fact, one of the movement disorder specialists, well, several have said that if you have pre-existing autoimmune conditions, you may be way more at risk for developing a neurodegenerative brain disorder. And I know the jury's still out on this, and I'm sure you've heard various things. Some people are theorizing that MSA is yet another autoimmune disorder. Don't know about that.
I have read about that over the last couple of months. The medical experts have changed so much on. They don't even think now that the misfolding alpha-synuclein protein is the cause of MSA, but rather just a part B of the process. They haven't gotten part A yet. And they're actually thinking about in the near future changing the names of it again, because MSA. He has nothing to do with MSAC, unlike the names think. Yeah, I've read so much from institutes of the study of medical and all the articles from clinical trials.
Things are going to evolve a lot within the next 2 years. And I think there's a lot that they need to know that they don't know. It's also very apparent that some doctors don't know anything.
Absolutely. And you live in northern Chicago, too. Like we're probably 50 miles apart, maybe. If I cut across, if I go to Lakeshore Drive, get up there, it's probably 40 miles. And it's amazing that we, in the Chicago area, we don't have what we need even for MSA. I mean, they're scattered, right?
It's not. Not serving me at all here. However, I have some really excellent specialists for the individual problems, and for that, I'm quite thankful.
I thought y'all had more up there than what we did down here.
No, as for some conditions or some things, but no, not for this.
I went to the emergency room one day with my suprapubic catheter, and the doctor goes, "What is this? Well, why do you have it?" And I'm like,
"Oh, dear Lord!
Aren't you a doctor? How won't you work on me?"
Unbelievable! How could
I found it funny. I had a call on Friday from the Social Security Administration. And these are government workers, and they've probably been there forever doing these phone calls. Like, it's a good job. And she's like, "What disease do you have?" And I'm like, "Multiple system atrophy." She's like, "Never heard of it." She's like, "What is that?" And I just told her, I said, "It's a neurodegenerative disease of the brain." And I didn't know what else to tell her, but even nobody has any idea what this thing is.
What I tell people is that it's sort of like a cross between Parkinson's and ALS, and that it's always considered fatal. But I don't accept that yet. But as of now, that's what, because one gross misunderstanding is that if this is just Parkinson's, then why can't you live with it?
True.
And you, people do and can live their whole entire lives quite well managing Parkinson's.
Yeah, Parkinson's, most people die of falls, not of the actual disease itself.
Right. That's true. I mean, I personally know people who've had it for 20, 30 years, and you'd never even know when they're doing very well.
Look at Michael J. Fox. I mean, he's starting to go down.
Oh, yeah. 40 years, I think.
Years and years. Yeah.
He's 30 plus years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned a couple, some interesting topics or comments. And one I want to expound on, what are, if any, misconceptions about MSA you'd like to put out there? I mean, just from your own personal experience.
Sure. Are you asking from the general public or among doctors?
Anything you've come across.
Well, again, one is that, you know, if Parkinson's is treatable, then MSA must be treatable too. People don't understand that there is really no cure. There are really no, but all we can do is treat the symptoms as of now. People, for instance, people don't understand why I have such a hard time with my blood pressure. The regulating system is broken. It's broken. It doesn't work. So taking blood pressure medicine, Midodrine or Flornef to raise the blood pressure and then Coreg or whatever else to lower it is almost pointless, because then you end up lowering it or raising it too high.
Higher or too low every time, yeah.
And you're going to either have a stroke from the high blood pressure, or you're going to fall and break your head from.
Yep.
My home health nurse said today when my blood pressure was so low, but my heart rate was up high, she's like, we want to give her something for the heart rate, but then you're messing with the blood pressure. So.
Yeah. Right. Well, people, they don't understand. They just, you know, we're in a very kind of fix it kind of culture, and people assume that there must be just easier fixes than there are, and there just aren't. Or that you must somehow be doing something wrong if you aren't able to manage it or live with it or fix it or whatever.
It's very frustrating.
And it's very frustrating.
Carrie, what advice would you give anybody who's out there facing similar challenges, either as a person with MSA or a caregiver that's helping care for a person with MSA?
Well, right. So for caregivers, I would say really don't ever assume that the person is just not trying hard enough, because chances are they really are, and they really can't do any better than what they're doing.
Those are wise words.
Be patient, please. Please, because it's more frustrating to the person who's ill than anyone else can possibly imagine.
Keep going. Yeah.
That's that. As far as to the patients, don't lose hope, because they are constantly doing trials. I think things are going to rev up in the next few years. Take what you can. Don't deny help where you can get it. Don't be proud, and do what you need to do to take care of yourself. Set boundaries, even if it feels like being selfish. For me, I keep helping other people because it makes me feel good, but I've even had to set some boundaries around that. I just have such limited resources. Another, as I think I might have said, is don't expect help or sympathy where it's not forthcoming. Don't try to, you know,
it's not coming. If nobody has a clue what you're talking about, they have no idea.
Don't try to force it. It's just not going to work. Just accept your relationships that you have on the level that they are, that they serve you, and don't try to make them into something else. Make sure you have a support network wherever that is, even if it's among strangers. If you're getting more support from your support group than you are from your own family, so be it. Then that's how it has to be. Don't try to find doctors who will work with you, hopefully, in looking for answers and also in combining alternative therapies with standard medical practices. Say, let me give you an example. Here's a simple one. I've heard that high-dose thiamine can help with cognitive function. And yet, of course, when I bring it up to doctors, they say there's no evidence of that. There's no reason for that. There's no proof of that. So don't do it. Well, I'm going to do it anyway because it works for some people, and I don't have any good reason not to try it. So, you know, you have to make decisions about who to listen to and who to not listen to and when, and how much danger you want potentially want to put yourself in as far as trying experimental things. So,
you gave me some very good advice today.
Thanks. So let's see what else. Right, those are the main things.
I got one. Don't touch me when I'm walking.
Right.
Like, I know you want to guide me and hold my hand. This goes to the kids, the wife, my friends, Jesus, God, you, me, Daisy. I don't care who it goes to. Like stop, grab. Like don't touch my arm. You know, like I'm trying to make sure you got the step. I got the step. If I don't have the step, I want to take the step. But just having to deal with you and me,
it's aggravating. Oh,
yeah, it's so annoying. It's so much more. It makes it harder because I'm getting too much tactile feedback from someone holding my arm, and then I somehow got to concentrate on a step. It's like, bam.
Right. I know. It takes a lot of mental effort to do a physical task.
I didn't realize that today when I was putting it. I watched my kids are 18 and 12. My daughters, and they're still they're not dishwasher enthusiasts, even though the dishwasher does very well. You know. But this morning I did the dishes, not washing machine, and put them away, wash them and put them away in the cabinets. And I haven't done both those back to back in probably since I've had MSA, because I got kids, right? And what a chore that was to grab plate, because you can no longer grab a bowl and really flip it over one correct direction. It has to go for the cabinet. You gotta get those two hands together, and then you're like holding it with the palms of your hands trying to move it over. Those are things you learn after a while.
That's right. And I have just a couple more suggestions. One is I have a lot of experience with self-advocacy. Also, it can be a real ball buster sometimes. I don't care what doctors or hospital staff think of me. I will piss anybody off if it may, put me in a safer position. I've fired doctors before. I've fired hospitalists before. So I would say to patients, if you are not good at advocating for yourself or you don't have the experience, get someone else to advocate for you. There are professional services. There are university programs where people train to be patient advocates now. I'm a lay advocate. I don't have a degree or a certification, but I just have a lot of experience at it. And I used to do a lot of that for other people. I don't quite have the energy to do it, but if you aren't good at self-advocacy, for the love of God, find somebody to help you because you need it. And then one other thing is that, there's a very fine line between being realistic and being hopeful. So knowing where this disease usually heads, you have to.
We know where it heads.
So you get your things in order. You try to live your best life while you can. You try to create magical memories and do all that. And then at the same time, keep an other eye towards the possibility that things may get better, or may just remain static and not progress past where they are now. So it's a very strange headspace to be in, but it's a good idea to try to find your own sweet spot between realism and hope.
I got a different question for this podcast. And given what you know with your journey before MSA and since MSA, and taking a look at all the symptoms, you seem very knowledgeable. You're spitting terminology that I could dream of. So which tells me you're well-rounded. You've definitely done your research.
Every day.
Do you think you've been misdiagnosed, or there is any other diagnosis that could explain this besides MSA?
I wish there were. In fact, I'd had a full autoimmune panel done for the very, very obscure autoimmune things like anti-IGLON 5 antibody, and which is one condition that can be mistaken for this, which is treatable with IVIG, I believe. Unfortunately, that is not it, and I wish it were again, because it would have been easier to deal with. So no, I don't. I think that everything else is being it's very unlikely that
right, because you were diagnosed. You weren't diagnosed with anything else before. Obviously, yes,
it's not as if I was diagnosed with Parkinson's,
right? Or pure autonomic failure or anything.
No, and even the expert in pure autonomic failure says that what I have is way beyond pure autonomic failure.
Right.
And is this rather than
pure autonomic failure? Sounds like it. Absolutely sounds like it.
And he's the person who knows. And if that's what he says, then that's what it is.
Well,
so unfortunately, that's the answer.
You've given us a lot of information today. And
happy to do so.
A lot to think about. And
I got one more question, Gary. One more. And obviously you can add anything you want
to say. Lay it on me.
What's a message of encouragement or inspiration that you have for anybody out there with MSA?
Or yourself.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, I would say, first of all, I have seen miracles happen in other people's lives and in my own life. I've seen my previous conditions, which were bleak and dismal and not headed in a good direction, completely resolve. I had scleroderma, lung issues. I had bronchiectasis, atelectasis, pleurisy, fibrosis, pulmonary hypertension, and even emphysema, all from autoimmune disease. And most of these were cured by the stem cells. My seizures stopped. Things got so much better. So there was hope then. I may not be looking at the same kind of hope now, but also look for joy in, everyone says this and it sounds trite, but it's really true. Look, try to find different things to find joy and satisfaction in, because it's out there for the taking. There are so many things to get excited about and be happy about, like the change of seasons.
And Carrie, what are your goals after today? with MSA, in your circumstance, where do we go from here?
Well, I am hoping to go to Mexico in about a week for some more stem cells. And I'm still looking at trials. As I said, I think I'm running out of options. And I haven't run out of options in the U.S. I'm still exploring. I was just disqualified for a couple. I'm looking in Europe, too. I'll keep looking. On the other hand, I want to be cured. I just don't want to be a research subject, because selfishly I want to actually be cured of this.
That's not selfish at all.
I'm going to keep doing juicing and doing drastic dietary things and getting using equipment that I have, like a NeuroCare brain cap. I want to get a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. Mm-hmm. So acquiring the things I need, I have a list. And so I have a lot. My days are all filled with researching, advocacy, looking for studies, trying to make decisions about where my funds are best spent and where my energy is best spent. And that's, I think, the best advice I could give everybody is to prioritize.
Is there, looking in hindsight, of course, hindsight's always 20/20. And in the corporate professional world, I say regrets are always unprofessional. So I say this question very informally and not professionally, but is there anything you wish you would have done before, knowing that you had MSA, anything you wish you would have done differently in the past?
No, I think I'm getting it right this time.
That answer is yes and no. Anything is positive, but yes, that's true. And I hope in between your research and medical excursions, as we'll call them, that you definitely get any type of vacation time, whether it's a beach or downtown Chicago or whatever. I hope you definitely get some of that, personal care, whatever that comes into.
I do. I went to a Halloween event the other night, and it was hard to get there, and it was hard to be there. and I was a little annoyed because they weren't ADA
yeah.
friendly. They had no bar stools, and I hadn't brought, I wanted to be part of the crowd, and then people weren't really coming up to talk to me. I think because I was apparently disabled, and that was a little hurtful, but that doesn't mean I'm going to, I will keep going to do things that are pleasurable. And in Mexico, I'll be with a friend in Lake Chapala, and that's lovely. So that will be nice.
Have a party time, right?
Quietly.
It's quite a lot. Yeah, that's my wife's from Mexico, so it's a very good place.
It'll be a nice change of scenery anyway. It's getting a little dreary here in Chicago.
Yeah, they said our first snow of the year is supposed to be tomorrow. I don't know where that's supposed to be at.
I don't know.
I wouldn't be.
I just heard that.
No, I do not want to be up there with snow. I'll be up there next week. No snow, please.
Gary, is there anything you'd like to add that we've missed, haven't asked, or just didn't bring up?
Oh, gosh. Just hang in there. If anybody wants to message me, and I am available to give a word of encouragement, I'll always do so. When I can't, I won't, but I do the best I can, and I'm not going to stop being who I am. So anybody who has any questions or wants to reach out for support.
How can they reach you?
I'm on a Facebook Messenger.
Okay.
And also I have a website, which is for when I was doing my medical intuitive work, which is kerrywalsh.net, kerrywalsh.net. So there's an email attached to it.
So it has been so awesome meeting you today and talking to you face to face. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Me and David today.
Yeah, we definitely want to hear about your updates and any changes. You know, unfortunately, there will be changes both ways, but hopefully more good than bad. But definitely reach out to us. We'll reach out to you and see, you know, down the road, and definitely want to have you back on and see where we've gone from
today. Oh, thank you. I still have plenty more to say. I mean, I have a whole other, but within a few weeks, I'll have a whole other boatload of information for you.
Well, good, because we'll definitely book it out, because definitely... I think we're almost booked in a year, but after that, then absolutely would love to have you on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Keep chatting with me.
Keep chatting with Daisy. Absolutely.
I will, Daisy. We'll be talking. Okay. You both take care.
You too, Carrie.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thanks so much.